Welcome to the Miami Tech Update, August 2nd, 2018. We have a special guest today. He's a person that you probably see on YouTube most of the time, and I met him actually on YouTube or maybe via Alan Thinks. I'm not going to remember how I met him, but if you go to a Miami Tech meeting, you probably bump into him. And no longer do, he's known as Lulato. Lulato, welcome to the Miami Tech Update.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. We were talking a little bit before that with the podcast started about what happened today. And it's like a secret plug into my YouTube channel, but it's quite interesting. I ride my bike to work every day. And sometimes I put it on the bus bike rack. But there was a problem with the bus. And so we had to swap buses, and I was working on the bus, and then I just sort of forgot, and then we switched buses, and I totally forgot my bike on the first bus, the one that it was broken. So besides having meetings and doing all the work and stuff today, I was also like trying to figure out what was going to happen with my bike, and I was doing a video about it, and it's been a little bit stressful because I had to go to the bank and I had to walk to the bank, which was kind of funny. And like without my bike, I feel like without legs, it's kind of like a weird feeling.
So what's next? You think you'll find it? Do you think you have to call like Miami Beach or Miami Dade transportation? What's your plan?
This has happened to me before. So that's why I was like, I probably can vlog this. I can make a video about it. And usually the 311 is pretty good about getting your stuff back from, especially when they're big things like bicycle. So far, I haven't had the same luck that I had last time, but they told me to wait until tomorrow morning. So I'm going to try to figure it out. I think if I had to put a percentage on this, I would say it's 60%, 75% that I will get the bike back. But let's hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're very confident. And if you do get your bike back, when will that video come out?
As soon as possible. I mean, it's a straight. These are the type of videos that I look forward to, because it's has a straightforward beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's kind of rewarding if you get your stuff that you're looking for. These are pretty simple stuff to edit for me, just because it has a linear things. But if I don't get it back, the video might like be a little bit lame because it doesn't have a happy ending or something.
Now, it was interesting because you're known for your videos. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what makes you famous?
I don't know if I'm famous, but I'm a designer. I'm a UX designer. A digital product designer. For the most part, I focus on design, graphics, vectors, things like that. And I mainly worked on startups and just helped them out with their applications and things like that. Recently, I started working at Royal Caribbean. So I've been like working from there, and I spend my time at co-working spaces. Mainly at WeWork because I'm a member, and some other places as well. But that's why I end up at parties, at WeWork parties, at co-working space parties. And I think it was about a year and a half ago when I had like this weird realization. And I hate to bring in politics, but it was literally the source of that's how it got started. So there's a big misrepresentation of what an immigrant kid was. So all I wanted to do is, one, learn how to edit video, and two, show who I am and give my perspective to the world through vlogging. And so I started vlogging, and I didn't tell anyone about it, just to learn how to edit. And little by little, I just started, I get comfortable enough that I wasn't ashamed to share my videos. It was more like that. And then I started focusing on tech, Miami tech events. And just because I think that they're fun and those are the type of people that I like to hang out with and things like that. And on my own, time, sometimes I do videos about artsy stuff, motion graphic stuff, or stop animation stuff to show the process of what UX is like. I try to like, whenever I think about doing videos like that, I think of my little cousins, the ones that are very little. If I try to tell them what I do for a living, and it's hard, you know, like how do you tell a little kid what UX design is all about? And I try to do that with Legos. I try to do that with like, you know, things like that are reachable and approachable. But yeah, so like I want my audience to be a little bit younger so I can like, I can reach them right when they're making the decision before college, kind of. So that, and then I vlog just to like keep it up because I think vlogging is the most accessible thing that anyone can do. If you think you're interested in any particular way, I think you should start vlogging. But yeah, that's what I think the channel will continue to do vlogs. But I am getting ready to do like a special tutorials for anyone who wants to get into UX. And they're going to be like almost like little movies, but they're going to show a little bit of the process of what's it like to make an app or what's it like to start things like that.
Now, being in Miami, how long have you been in Miami so far?
I came here when I was 14 from South America. I was born in Peru. I spent a little bit of time here. I went to high school in North Florida in a city called Alachua. It's close to Gainesville area. I spent like my high school days there. My mom still lived here. So I would spend a lot of my summers here. I would go back and forth. She just wanted me to be like closer. For those who don't know, I was grew up as a Hare Krishna. It's a realm of Hinduism. And so like there's a big community of Hare Krishnas in Gainesville. That's why like I ended up there with my aunt and like with a lot of family members. Then I ended up in college in Ohio for 4 years. So I came back to Miami and I've been living in Miami since like 2012. So about, oh my God, time flies. So like about 6, 7 years. Yeah.
Now, being in Miami for the past couple of years, how do you see the tech scene here in Miami? Now that you've gone to most of the meetings, how do you see it? How do you rate it compared to the other cities across the country?
I would say the biggest word that comes back is underrated. There is a lot of, so the people that I push back on saying that there's no talent in Miami are the people who are not from here and they want to hire here. And they're having a hard time mainly because they don't make the right approach on how to access the talent that is actually here. And I hang out with a lot of people who are from here. I go to tech events from here. The Miami Bitcoin Hackathon is a great example of the type of talent that is here. And then you get a lot of people who work in New York and they have a lot of friends in New York and then they're trying to like expand their reach here in Miami. And it's difficult because there is a big wall of, you know, like outsiders, tourists, things like that. It's also a part of our problem. So I understand when they're saying that there's not enough talent in Miami. I know where they're coming from, but what I see, what I witness with my own eyes are a lot of cool projects and a lot of like, things that are happening within us and like we know each other and we know what's happening, but I also think that we're not doing a great job of implementing those projects and feature those projects outside of Miami. I think it's underrated for sure.
I agree. I mean I've been around the Miami tech scene for the past 10 years and yeah, it is underrated. I've been seeing it growing a lot. And a lot of interest, I think, especially for people that it seems like what I can tell their industry is kind of fading away. Well, not fading away, but it feels like something's going to happen to the industry soon and they want to jump into the tech scene. so they can, you know, keep a living. And that's what I've been seeing in these meetings. A lot of interest, like, how can I get my company more techie? That's what I've been seeing a lot. And a lot of startups, too. I've been seeing a lot of them, you know, that just prop up out of nowhere. There's so much potential. And also, like, the reach of Latin America. A lot of, like, the big tech companies usually put an office here so they can have good communication with the Latin American countries and the Latin American markets. You lead a Dribble meetup. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Dribble, for those who don't know, is a website that is for designers. It's a little bit like the Twitter for designers. You share a 400 by 300 pixel area. So it's like a little small rectangle. And so you share like a little bit of a screenshot of what you're doing. And I've always been a fan of the website. It's very hard to get into because you need an invite. And it was even harder to get into like back in the day. So it's very well curated, I think. And even the algorithm, like it's good for design. Over the years, it has expanded, and they have meetups all over the world. And I wanted to meet, like, when I came back here, I wanted to meet more designers. So like, and nobody was having the Dribble meetup in Miami. No one was hosting it. So I emailed the lady, I think she's in Houston. I don't know. I emailed the Dribble lady, and she told me what I needed to do, what the steps are all about. So I started doing it. I started like texting all the designers that I know. I started emailing people. I started promoting it, and little by little, like it started like growing. I always kind of keep it fun. I always keep it chill. I know there are a lot of panel events going on all the time, but I try to keep the Dribble events that I host more like beer and chill and pizza, because I know when people get off work, they wanna like relax. I know that there some people want panels, some people do stuff, but there's a lot of those. So I just wanted people to hang out and talk about pixels, talk about CSS, whatever it's going on in their lives, their struggles, or maybe get some feedback. So it's been chill like that, and it's been growing. And for anyone who wants to get into the community, wants to connect, I don't only encourage you to come to my event. I encourage you to like also start your own event, as in like maybe it's not design, maybe you like soccer, or maybe you like stuff. Try to gather some people and try to keep it like consistent, because I think like I have gotten so much back from it. It's quite amazing, because like you meet like everybody, and like everybody's so chill, and it's been quite a good experience, I think.
One thing about the meetups in Miami that has grown so much, back 10 years ago, it was just Refresh Miami. And now you're seeing, you know, Bitcoin meetings, Dribble meetings, Iron Hack meetings, Waffle Wednesday, which I'm not sure if they still have it. Sorry if anyone's listening. Which meetings do you usually go to besides your own Dribble meeting that you kind of go consistently?
I want to say, like, I try to go, and this is just whatever is easier or closer to me, but at the same time, I try to avoid panel meetings. Not that I think, like, whatever. I think panel meetings are great, but are very similar to what we are used to in the traditional school system, where, like, someone powerful is talking in the panel, and everyone's sort of listening. And if you think about it from a perspective of brain power, you're only using someone's brain for like a while, and everyone's just listening. And that's great for like, I think for a web recording, it's great for like record it and like listen to later, maybe like a podcast. But I think when you have this amount of people gather, there's so much potential to do fun stuff that challenge people's ideas. There is like, I think like having, I don't know, like I, traditionally against panels. That's in general. I think there could be more cool stuff. I'm passionate about having hackathons, prototype-a-thons, things like that that engages everybody to do something fun and then present it. Or like maybe like board game night, or like everyone's like shares a little bit of their things like that, where it includes and involves everybody. When someone's talking and then everybody has to raise their hands to ask questions, and then other people are like waiting or they don't get to ask their questions, they just sort of waste their time, or where they could be doing something more fun, I guess. I don't know.
That's an interesting perspective that you had about that. Yeah, I mean, sometimes panels could be boring and it feels like it could be a drag sometimes.
Yeah.
I enjoy the ones that are like where the speaker is more intuitive. I've seen some speakers that have never spoken before, and they're, you know, come from big companies and they're CEOs.
Yeah.
And I mean, yes, it brings some value, but I like the ones that really encourage you and they really like, okay, this is my story, and then ask me anything, Q&A. And then sometimes they wait till after the meeting, and then and they probably spend 1 or 2 hours speaking to people one-on-one. I love that. There was one meeting that they had for Refresh Miami. It was the girl that did the emojis for Apple.
Okay.
I'm not sure if she speaks much, but it feels like it was her first time. But she was really good, really encouraging. And it was – which is one thing about Miami, that we do bring some good speakers typically. I haven't seen Gary Vee speaking at a free event. I know you can't
– Where was this?
What was that?
Where was this event? Like, I love Gary.
Well, he did came in for Tony Robbins, and okay. It was $40, and I'm not sure why I couldn't go. I think it was like during lunch, and during the day I'm busy. I'm swamped. I can't go anywhere. But it'd be awesome to bring him. But Gary V could fell out of the stadium, I think.
I thought he was at the. Sorry, I just ate cheese.
Don't worry about it. I love the spontaneity. I love it. The
spontaneity. He was at the Dolphin Stadium, right?
Yes, he was. It was like a real estate thing.
Okay.
I don't know how it went, you know. And to be honest, I go to a lot of meetings. Sometimes the ones that really count, sometimes I don't make it.
Yeah.
But hopefully in the future. Now, it seems like. Like, I kind of know you more like as a video person than a graphic designer. Has people kind of like label you as a video guy? Do you do video production for business? Where do you stand with video?
That's a very interesting question, because when I was a little bit younger, maybe like 15, I always thought of filmmaking. Like, I see Scorsese, you see like these big people, and you're like, oh my God, they're awesome. And maybe because of my background and where my goals were when I was little, high school, and I was like, oh, I didn't do well in the English SAT, so I know what my future looks like. I'm going to focus on this, and, like, I'm just going to try to – so, like, I sort of reached, like, this level, and I'm sort of like, all right, I'm just going to focus on what I think I can do well. Back then, cameras were very expensive. The video editing, like, I was like, whoa. And so a lot of the stuff seemed unreachable. It seemed like very far away. And over the years, you know, now you can like shoot stuff with your phone and things like that. I shoot stuff with my point and shoot, because it's with me every time. So my thoughts of filmmaking has changed over the year, whatever that is, or whatever people think of filmmaking. I hate that word. That word, it's so confusing. Now that I started blogging, and a lot of people have mentioned to me that they really like the videos, and most of the times I'm really ashamed to like even post them, because a lot of those videos, I think they're boring, because I think my life is kind of boring. But every once in a while, interesting things happen, and that raises that a video that I think it's interesting, and it becomes more odd than like, oh, that is a super cool video, and it just happens to be that way. In school, I studied filmmaking just because like they train us to do advertising work, and one of the things that we have to do is like study photography, study like filmmaking for ads and advertising on TV and all this stuff. So I sort of had the background to all the things that I learned. I was learning to go to an advertising agency. What happened was that I started, when I graduated, I started doing a lot of startup weekends. And I started like hanging out with people who are doing a startup, and I love it. So I started doing like apps, and I started focusing on that. And I didn't really look back. And it's not like I want to go to Hollywood. I don't care about Hollywood and stuff. I don't care about becoming a director or whatever. I get stressed when there's a lot of people under me, like I have to direct and tell people what to do. That stuff stresses me out. When I discovered blogging, I realized a couple things that I didn't know before, which was candidacy, like grabbing people when they don't know that they're being filmed, which sounds a little creepy, but if you choose the right moments to show, you make them look good and you make them look human. That's something that you cannot do in direct. Like when you're directing as a director, you have to tell the actor how to be human. But if you catch them, if you catch footage of people being human just by nature, you have good footage, right?
I agree.
So you end up with like the reality, like as opposed to like a film, like a traditional film. So you end up putting together pieces of people saying, I love when I say hello and when I introduce myself, I love catching that moment because people are nice to you when they're shaking your hand. People are nice when they're like saying hello, when you're saying goodbye. And those moments translate good into like a put together blog or whatever film. So like my ideas of filmmaking has changed. And when people see my videos, they ask me to do videos for them. And it's a little bit stressful because they are with the mindset of doing a commercial, which it can be done. It's just not fun for me. And, you know, traditional stuff with the gimbal, and they wanted to look, you have to have a drone shot so it's like look cool, or 2018. So it's like there's a lot of like misrepresentation of the word, but I just like to show Miamians are their best, and through events, through hanging out with my friends, and through doing stuff like that on YouTube, you can do that. But I have gotten like offers to do videos with other people. It's just like it's difficult for me to like please other people when it comes to like editing, video editing. Like, I think it's a little weird, but yeah, UX is a little bit more straightforward. There's A/B testing. There's like things, there's no arguments. There's just like more like what this screen needs to do and stuff like that. And you press the button and the animations are like more straightforward. You have a goal. With filmmaking, it's more of an, and I don't want to say art because it's just like, I don't like to call myself an artist, but like, it's more artistic, I think. I think it's more like, I don't know.
I gotta be honest, your videos are really well done. I mean, yeah, they're very artistic. It's something that I think you just let it flow, let like the nature background flow it out. And you're probably one of the few vloggers that cover Miami or Miami events or Miami tech events that I've seen. I think, you know, Alan Things has done some few videos, but I think you've done like really, you know, deep videos to these hackathons, which there's like a lack of. I feel like there's a lack of coverage, you know. Don't you think Miami tech, you know, should be more covered through videos and maybe put them more on YouTube? Or
I think it's a little bit of an approach of why you think YouTube is and what you want to do with your YouTube channel. I think it's important. I see it as a document. This is going to feel a little bit morbid, but this is how I think Miami is, or like how it is. I consider us to be the last Miamians. There is a big chance that this city is going to be underwater. So in the future, when people are trying to wonder what were the last people who lived here, what were they doing, how were they living their lives? So it's, for me, like it's a stamp in history, or like even as inaccurate as I portray it, because I am very biased and very like uplifting, and I always try to make like happy videos. It's a little bit of the history of what happened here as the last Miamians. So I know it sounds morbid because it's hard to think of Miami as like as the new Venice, or maybe it's like keep sinking, but it that is for me. So like I think product design and hackathon for me is a priority, as in like the, you can really solve difficult problems with those tools, and the excitement that you get as watching LeBron James should be the same excitement that you see like the best product designers in the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are people who are making really cool apps, and the fact that this is accessible to everybody should be more aware. So that's where I'm coming from. I think a lot of people are like, they want to be famous. I think a lot of people are like, they want to like make blogs about the most popular topics, right?
Yeah.
So that's why they focus on that. But I want to make sure that there is something on history, or like a kind of like a stamp or like a noted that there's also cool stuff going on here in terms of tech.
Now, you remind me a little bit of Casey Neistat. Who are your favorite vloggers that you really look up to or that you also follow?
Oh, for sure. I love Casey by far. I follow Gary Vee. There's this guy, his name is Brandon Lee. He's an amazing filmmaker. So he doesn't do vlogs. He has really sophisticated tutorials. He's also not a blogger. He does weekly videos. His name's Nerd Writer. And he does video essays about art and different things. I watch all the, I don't watch all the blogs regularly, but I do follow that that YouTube controversy, YouTube drama kind of like on the back of my head, because I think it's very interesting how to drive, views and how to drive traffic through different tricks and hacks. There's a lot of that. How you name your videos is so key. So like this is people who are vlogging every day, even if you find their content kind of lame, like Logan Paul and like the brothers and stuff like that. I find their content kind of lame, but things that they're doing through clickbait and through stuff like that, it does work in the sense of like they understand the psychology of how people click and how to like manipulate them in a bigger way.
Yeah, there is a lot of psychology, especially in Silicon Valley. I mean, they use it. I mean, just to get clicks and things like that.
Yeah. So I watch a lot of that. I've been getting into like a new YouTube channel that some of my friends have. I am still new when it comes to vlogging, in the sense of for me, it was difficult to like look at the camera and start like videotaping myself, just because I think it's kind of funny, especially when you're doing it in front of other people, because it's like, but so like I've been getting used to that, but I see them and I understand them and I know where they're coming from, but I find their content to be less like what I like. So that's why I think everybody should be blogging, and you should, I think more than that, I think like professional people that are like doing, young professionals that are doing interesting stuff, they should be blogging so that younger kids, because YouTube is for kids. Let's just get that out of the way. YouTube is for kids. So whatever it is that you're doing, it's going to be watched by younger kids. So then you'll watch. If you make your blog interesting about the topics that the young professionals are doing, hopefully they'll get an inside look of what's it like to open up a new business, or what's it like to like try to hack your way into like in social media, or open up your Shopify, or whatever it is that you're doing, which is interesting. I think you should start blogging.
What equipment do you use? What camera? What type of mics? You know, for the video people out there wondering.
I use a RX 100. It's really good. It looks like this. It lives right here on my pocket. Right here, I have like a little thing. I also have a DSLR, which is heavy and punishing to carry, that I used to carry around. I just because I love the city a lot and I love Art Deco. I grew up like, you know, worshiping a lot of like the architects on this city. So I do have a very long lens, 300 millimeter, like super long lens. And I use it to like shoot videos and time lapses around the city. So when I'm vlogging, it's not me just talking and talking and talking and talking. I use it like to take a break and like show pictures of Miami and like with motion and I put it together and it sort of feels okay. In terms of a mic, like a Rode mic I used to have, but I broke it. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I have a lot of like equipment that I should be using, but I think, when it comes to candidacy, you want to have something in your pocket that you just pull out and you're ready to go. And because if you just have moments of people like prepare and talk and like stuff like that, the video kind of looks a little bit stiff. And this camera is so tiny that like no one, if I go to a club, no one says anything. If I go to like an event, no one says anything. But if I bring my big stuff, like you can't bring that in here.
Oh, like that good video, point.
That video looks the same. Like the quality of this camera, it's amazing what cameras can do now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah.
You know.
So I think.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah. So like I was just gonna say that it doesn't matter. Like when it comes to like cameras, as long as you can bring it into places when you have access to, that people don't freak out and like. I think it's great. I think more power is more powerful.
You know something? You're right. And like the main thing about the iPhone, one of the most peculiar things is that there's 800 engineers working on the iPhone camera. Can you believe that?
That's insane.
Yeah, that's how important.
That's crazy.
And I really do believe in Snapchat's philosophy. You know, the main thing of the iPhone is the camera. That's what really, yeah. you know, besides calling people or using it as a phone, but I mean, it is the camera. It's just people like to capture things. It's, the camera, what it's almost, about, it's about 100 years old. So it just, you know, just keeps going, keeps evolving and who knows what's going to be next. But, you said you were involved with Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency, do you own any coins or anything like that, or?
I hold a little bit.
Okay.
It's not a big deal. I don't mind talking about it. I think it's important. I think like Bitcoin is, I think people see it as money. I think I see it as a value, as value for society. I think there's a lot of people who doesn't, especially a lot of immigrants, especially a lot of people who are under the shadows, that they don't have access to banks. And I think like they don't have, like for us, like you just go to the bank and like you open an account and you put up your social security and straightforward. But there needs to be said that there's like a lot of people who don't have a social security, who don't have access to all these things. And these coins allow them to do the basic stuff. Like, I don't know, like, trade and things, and I don't know. I think it's important as in like having alternative currency. I think it pushes back on the idea that banks have all the power and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, Bitcoin, I love Bitcoin, but I would like to think that it's gonna stay around for a long time. That I think, like, I try not to look at the price so much because I think it's like a little bit confusing and a little bit more. And, I think people should, if you're buying Bitcoin, I think you should believe on the foundation of the ideals and the principles about it. I really like Dash. I don't know. I like, there was another one that it was like really cool. That was fast. Cause I think like transaction needs to be like, Bitcoin's transactions is a little bit slow. Bitcoin Cash was cool too. I think it's faster. I think, I don't know, what was the other one? It was
Monero?
There was another, Monero, that's what it was. That I thought it was like a little bit more secretive, which I think is great. Privacy is always good. I don't know. I mean, when it comes to Bitcoin, I try to shift the conversation as in like the technology more than the how much Bitcoin I have or how much Bitcoin my friends have and stuff like that. Because I think it's just like the same conversation about Miami people owning jets, which I think it's whatever. Like, whatever. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few coins. I have Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, Litecoin, Ethereum Classic. I got Ripple. I got a few coins in my portfolio. But you know, like, all of us are waiting, when's that next jump? You know, when's that December 2018? And you know, like, I was telling a lot of people that I consult that, you know, there's two different groups for cryptocurrency: the people that are true believers, and the other group are the people that want to flip it, you know, to old paper currency. So, and there's like one group that does like the mix, you know, they kind of hold, but then they like to flip it a little bit and make some money. But I think cryptocurrency is here to stay. People think it's a Ponzi scheme and people think it's not going to last long. No, I think this is going to, I mean, it's going to last forever. And I think it's still early. It feels like the early internet days. It feels like, you know, people think, oh, internet will leave someday. No, no, no. This is here to stay. And you've seen a lot of people, Goldman Sachs, Wall Street people, jumping into this cryptocurrency world. Like, they're getting hired by these crypto agencies. So we'll see what happens. It's still early. I can't wait for the fall and the winter and just see where, like, the trends are going.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. Like I said, like, I believe that Bitcoin is going to be a big player. But I also believe that people like, okay, this is what people like to think of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is like the MySpace, and there will be a Facebook who will eat a MySpace. That's fine. But I don't think that way, because when it comes to money, it's very difficult for you to, just assuming everything, it's very difficult for you to change banks. Not because it's impossible, it's mainly because it's a hassle. A lot of people have invested real value, real money into Bitcoin, so it'll be difficult for them to just trade everything and like and follow everything. So I think Bitcoin is here to stay. I don't know what the top or the ceiling is, but I think there will be other players. MySpace, when you go to MySpace, there's nothing for you, there's no investment in it. You just put your email and your password. And Facebook was way better than the next one, and then all the social medias after that. It's not real money. I mean, there is time that you invest on the platform, but if you really want to change your social media, you just sort of change it. When it comes to banks or when it comes to like real value, if you are already invested in Bitcoin, I don't think you're going to like leave it so fast. I think it has a little bit of friction when it comes to like trading and things like that.
I agree. And, you know, there's going to be some bad apples involved with it, and obviously it's also, you know, used for good. It's decentralized, which a lot of people like it. You were telling us earlier that you're in WeWork and like the whole co-working space. How do you like it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so a little bit of background. Before, I used to work at a startup, and it was like it was a traditional office. It was cool, but it was whatever. It has its pros and cons. I think if you're a single person, if you're a freelancer, or if you're somebody on your own, there's no better alternative than joining a co-working space by far. Because what ends up happening is that you get to meet a lot of people there's a lot of small businesses here. There's a lot of small businesses in all the co-working space. And they all need people like us. Like, a designer, somebody who can code, they need a website to be done, they need a logo, they need all these things. And if you're around, and if you know the basics of businesses, if you know the basic of things, you will be involved in any capacity. And there's a lot of them here. So like, it has helped me like just like create more freedom for me, because I used to like have to like email, you used to have to email clients. It's like, hey, what's going on? Like, do you need something new? Like, I'm offering something new. And like, do you need a new website or do you need a new logo? So it's like things like that. And that like goes away. It's more like, hey, you do this, right? Let me do something. So there's always that, even if you don't do it, there's always that back end of your head. It's like people asking you to do, there's always opportunities that are popping. So that level of like, all right, I'll be okay. If this month was a little low, the next month will be a little bit better. But like, there's like, and if you do good business, if you deliver good stuff, the same people will call you again and again. In terms of that, is for sure. There's always like, there's bad things. There's always like, not terrible things. It's just like, let me give you a good example. Just by being me, I'm very friendly. So I don't have an office. I have like a hot desk. I can be anywhere. So I just sort of chill. So I work from here sometimes, but sometimes I'm in the Royal office, which is in the other WeWork. So like I can focus there. It's so awesome. But here is like everybody says hello, which is amazing. I love when people say hello. But when you're like on a mission to finish something, it's like it gets a little distracting.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting because in Miami, there's about 4 to 5 WeWorks. And Miami has become a big co-working, huge co-working city. You know, you got, you know, WeWork, Blue Beta. The Lab was one of the first ones. Obviously, you might be more WeWork biased, but what's the difference between each one? Yeah, things like that.
I would say I'm more of a building.co bias. I love that place. The building.co, not that if anyone who that we work is listening to this podcast, I love you guys. It's more startup-y, a building. There's a lot of tiny little, not that other, let me take that back. There's a lot of more tech startup at building.co. Mm-hmm. I believe that all, if you start a company right now, even if it's not tech related, it's also a startup. So you might, like there's a lot of like small businesses here. Like traditional, all small businesses. There's a lot of marketing things going on here. So it's that. But if you're looking for an app, I think there's like one app at this WeWork. Maybe like there's like two apps, right? But a building, there's like everyone's an app or everyone's a platform or everyone's a tech something. So that's that. Then the other WeWorks, I mean, every WeWork is also the same based on the, I think it's neighborhoods more than the company, more than the brand. Pipeline is also very, I don't know, a little bit startup-y.
It's interesting. I was watching a news story on WeWork and the owner, and they're trying to do, I forgot, like everything is we something, but there's one place for kids where I guess they have a school. There's a place for we live or something.
Yeah, we live.
Something like that, and then they eventually want to do a thing called We, where everything's there, where you work, go to school, you do groceries, shopping. So he wants to expand it to like its own city, I guess.
I saw the We Live stuff. I thought that was very interesting, but I used to watch some Star Trek. This idea of you don't have to like choose, like invade your life with like a lot of choices and everything is sort of like set up for you. You don't have to do your things at home. Everything is just great. But everything looks like someone else designed it or someone else. It's not your life. It's somebody else's life. So like my room, even though it's messy but it has my things in it. It has my personality, my sticky notes, my edits, my things on my wall, all my creative stuff in my wall. And I saw that the things on We Live, and I thought like there's so many cool things on We Live, but I didn't make them. It was made by someone else. It was made by a designer somewhere else. And sometimes it feels like that. Sometimes I feel like if you don't care about making those choices, I think it's great. I think it's a great option. I think We Live is going to be great. But I feel a little hesitant of leaving my apartment for like an apartment that was created by someone else. I don't know.
You know, and back to what you were saying about, you know, where you're at an office space and, you know, working and getting new clients within the office community. And same for me. I mean, I have an office building and I've done like, you know, dozens of projects with my office neighbors. It's great. I'm not a believer from working from home, in my opinion. I think I prefer being in a community or being in an office environment. You know, leave your personal stuff and have your business spot, you know, so you're able to focus and able to grow. And who knows, I might been thinking about having like WeWork presence in the future, maybe on hire someone and just being there for me, but we'll see. It's down the pipeline, but I've heard good things about it. So
yeah, WeWork is great. I think like there's a lot of nice people working here. Most of the people, not that work at WeWork, but the people who handle the things are, they're on top of things. There's always like people who are new and they don't have an experience, but it's a learning stuff. I think overall have been positive for me. It's great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I think it has been positive for me because like what I think YouTube channel has given me is it has given me power to like push back, especially to them. And they see it. They watch the videos. I put them on. We have a members WeWork. It's kind of like our own Facebook, right?
That's
and
awesome.
Like I make videos and I put them there. And sometimes I complain. I complain about that there's not coffee on the weekend, stuff like that. And they're like not entirely happy for me talking about that stuff. But it's good for them to know that I think they should start using plastic a little bit less or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good, I think there's improvement, but like overall co-working space is here to stay. It has changed the world for freelancers for a way better place.
You know why? You know, it's funny because I'm enjoying this interview a lot. You know why? Because it seems like you've been everywhere in Miami. So I could go to any angle I want and we could just talk about it. Versus I've had other interviews, but they're niches. But you're like, I've been there, I've been this, I've done that. So we could have a part two, by the way. You said you're involved in a startup. How was that experience? And do you get a lot of invites to join other startups still? Or
yeah, I mean, it startups, there's, for those who like are just trying to figure out what to do with your life and there's multiple paths, but there's two main paths that you can take. You can take a traditional job where things are fleshed down and figured out for you, and you sort of like do what they need you to do. And there's experience within that, and there's like a platform for hierarchy and things to do, and then you sort of like climb your way to the top. Or if you like a certain area, you sort of stay in that area. That's great. I think it's fantastic. But the rise of technology and the rise of accessibility for everybody has created a new platform where small businesses can be very powerful and create startups in a way that, that other ones can like, that can change the world very quickly. Facebook has only been around for a decade. Like General Motors and every other company, every other huge company has been around for so many years. And Facebook has been able to monopolize media and like so quickly. So the ability of technology and like when, if you start working for a company and that company grows quickly, big, you get to experience that firsthand. And so I just love that environment. There's pros and cons for everything. I think startups stuff, they don't have a lot of resources. You're always dealing with like you're dealing with a minimal amount of stuff, which is cool because you get to be creative about what you spend your time, your priorities. But there's also things that you wanna like experience on a big company, like you have more resources to do cool stuff and maybe like and get involved in certain aspects of the company. I think you learn the most at startups, but then you use that expertise at bigger companies. That's my view on things. There's always people like asking me to do stuff and like, you always have to like learn how to say no very nicely.
Unless they're going to pay you a lot of money.
Which startups cannot afford to do always. Because like, if you're paying a lot of money for a UX designer, it's not that UX designers shouldn't be paid the most. I think it's just you just need to know what to focus on. And usually it's trying to buy a customer, not buy a customer, but like try to like generate leads or things like that, that will be more beneficial for a startup.
Now, Lolato, if, you know, if a person, what's the most common reaction when someone's, you know, like when someone sees you far away, but they recognize you, like, do they know you as the video guy? Do they know you as a graphic guy? What is the most common response when people see you?
YouTube.
Really?
For sure, by far. Like, YouTube, it's amazing. Like, because if I share something on Dribbble, like, it's great. I think, like, a lot of designers are going to see it. And if I go to a Dribbble event, I think it's going to be awesome. But if I put, like, I just made a video called Dancing with a Spanish Teacher. And there's a Spanish – one of my clients is a Spanish teacher. She has a company. It's a Spanish hangout. She teaches Spanish. And she invited me to an event. And everybody knows her as well. And I know – so a lot of people sort of kind of know me a little bit. And so, like, that video has way more access. It doesn't have many views, but it has the possibility of reaching more people. If I show a cool animation that I just did, if I show it to my cousin, he'll be like, cool. I don't know what to say. Like, but there is, but the value on entertainment on YouTube, playing a short story, 4 minutes or whatever it is, it has more power. It has more intimacy. It has more, you become more relatable with other people. I try to achieve that whenever I can, because go ahead.
Your videos reminds me of Wes Anderson. I'm not sure if you know about him. It has a similar vibe or feel. I know, little vibe and feel to it, which I like his films a lot. I mean, I haven't watched his recent ones, but it has that vibe, which I like. It's simple, it's calm, and it's subtle.
No, I love his timing is everything. Wes is like one of my favorites to make it. He always has that sense of humor that I love. So I appreciate you saying that.
Me too. I love his humor. It's some people don't get it, but I get it. Yeah. It's like, it's great.
Yeah. Dude, I'm a little shocked that you compare me with Wes, but he's great. I think simplicity, timing, and that type of humor is like what makes his films great. There's a lot of art direction there that I think, like, you know, filmmaking will able to do. But I think that you can do a lot with just those two things, like with just timing and that type of like simplicity. Video editing is all about timing, and that's it.
It's just like comedy. Now, if you have the chance in the future, and if you're offered or maybe an investor, hey, Lolato, I could give you money for the film that you want to make, would you do it?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you said it perfectly. If he gives me final cut, if he gives me like that opportunity to just do whatever I want to make, if somebody gives me money to do like a high production stuff, and he says, I'm not going to be involved on anything, I would say yes. But if I know anything about the film industry, I know that that's very unlikely to happen. Like, yeah. No one's going to give you, like, a final cut. No one gives you final cut because they want to make sure they have a female lead that is very beautiful and very marketable. They want to make sure that their money is going to be returned. I think there's just like any other business. But I think there is a more interesting thing that taking chances and making risks, blowing money on the things that you believe, on the shot that you think is going to be greater, or things like that, that someone who is more focused on the money is not going to be able to let you be free. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Which is what I can tell from your YouTube channel is, I mean, there's no one common theme. You know, you're not all tech. It could be, I could have an adventure in Miami Beach one day. The next day, I could report about a Bitcoin hackathon. And then I could talk about a World Cup predictions with Alan Thinks. I mean, I just love it. I mean, I don't, like I said, it's like Casey Neistat. He's kind of random like that, you know? But yeah, keep it up, man. Really, really like your work. And like, you don't come out videos every week, I've noticed. I mean, sometimes you're not urgent. You're kind of like maybe 1 month later. Like, do you have like a timing thing, or like whatever you feel, you just do it? Or
I'm going through an interesting transition right now. I don't like to like promise things to everyone just because I think what's been happening. I just tell you a little bit about it so you can understand a little bit my inconsistency. So a lot of people will ask me, where are you going with YouTube? What's going to happen? And they think, basically what I've been trying to do in the background, it's like I'm building up this e-commerce, a very basic e-commerce. And it's basically a lot of shirts and a lot of things and things that people can buy related to the things that I talk about. So open source design is a big for me because I like people to get involved into design and things like that. And so it's that, and it's the fact that I want to make tutorials to like do stuff like that, so that the tutorials that I will be making will be like a high production, very well written. Once I have those done, I think I'm going to continue to go back blogging weekly or even more often than that. Because what happens is, like, when I started blogging, I was blogging sometimes 3 times a week, and it was great, and it was very interesting. But it doesn't give you much time to do anything else, which it sucks, because I think once I have that foundation in place, for example, to create a really good trailer, so when people come to the channel, they have no idea what the channel is about. It's just like a vlogging channel. So I want to create a really good trailer. I want to have like a couple of really good UX tutorials, a couple of good like good set pieces that are there. And then vlogging, it will just continue to drive traffic, and then people will watch that other video. So that's been happening in the background. That's why I haven't been doing weekly, but I will come back to do weekly.
I like where you're going with it. I think, you know, doing like the whole store shirt thing. I think you're really creating your brand, make it perfect almost, and just being patient. I think that's very smart. You're just planning the blueprint, and I know you're gonna execute it. So keep it up, man. How can people reach you? What's the best way online to reach you?
Twitter. Twitter and Instagram. I am the Lulato. I was trying to get the Lulato, but someone else added already, so I had to add that. THELULATO. And I check out Twitter almost every day, pretty much every day. I check out Instagram. I try to check Instagram a couple times a day, but I don't have it installed on my phone. I have Twitter installed on my phone, and so that's that. You can always say hello. I always like check those things. I like to tweet every day, but yeah.
And where does Lulato come from? Is that like a common nickname, or?
My name is Luis Ricardo Latorre, so that's a little long.
Wow. I love it. Wow. But like, you've met other people with that nickname.
Lulato? No. What do you mean?
Like, have you ever met like another person called Lulato, like itself, like he calls himself?
No. I mean, there's somebody who owns that, who has the Lulato at Twitter, but it's like random. He doesn't even tweet. So it's like, I'm trying to get like, and then when I was in college, I bought Lulato.com because I thought it was cool. And so I just went with it. And I think it's simple. It's 3 syllables. It's like Lulato, and it's hard. It's easy to pronounce. And that's why I kept with it. I don't know. I think it's,
Now, you told us a future project. Any more future projects you're working on that you want to preview the audience?
I think like, what I want to do with these tutorials, and I think what it is and what I've been looking and Googling other people's tutorials when it comes to UX, is also UX are targeted to people who are also designers. So if you want to, I don't want to do that. I want to sit down with my little cousin and tell her and teach her how to draw in Vector in a tool called Figma. Figma for me, it's a tool that is so accessible as opposed to Sketch. Sketch and Figma are kind of competitors right now, but if you think about it as a Latin American perspective, if you are a UX, if you want to become a UX designer, you have to buy a really expensive Mac computer. And then you also have to buy another expensive tool called Sketch, which is another $100. So if I tell my cousins to like, hey, you should try this, they'll be like, ah, I don't have money. And so like, they're not going to do it. Figma, it works on the website. It's www.figma.com. And anyone has access to it. And it's free. So you can start doing it right now. So I'm going to start teaching like basic stuff, vector stuff in Figma. And I think like that's why it's important, right, for me to make UX accessible for everybody, the basics. I'm talking about like steps. I'm talking about like, no, like how to use the program, but more like you can use this anywhere or these thoughts into any particular projects, even if they're maybe UX, maybe not UX at all, maybe just a simple website. You can use these things for like any particular problems that you're having. So that's being my main focus right now. So hopefully like I can get those done in a couple months, and then I'll be back on blogging more regularly.
Lulato, you're full of creativity, full of projects. And I'll definitely see you around in the next meeting or so. I usually go to Refresh, typically is my main one, and then anything after that. I go to WordPress, and then I go to I think that's it for now. Sometimes I think Iron Hack hosts some stuff sometimes, but mainly Refresh. But thanks for coming on to the Miami Tech Update. Appreciate it.
No, dude. Thank you for having me.